is Changing the Narrative. I'm your host, David Reeves, and we are changing the narrative every week on this program. We've been spoon-fed a narrative of naturalism, a narrative of atheism for generations. That narrative has negatively influenced society. It's negatively influenced culture. But what we're doing right now is we're changing the narrative. We're getting back to truth. That's right, the truth of God's word, the truth of the gospel. And with me today, Steve Falling, a wonderful friend. He has his doctorate from Berkeley in... Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. I am so glad to have you in studio today. Now, just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, kind of your background, a little bit about your education, and what you're doing now in ministry.
Okay. Yes. Well, I'm an organic chemist. I received my PhD in organic chemistry, synthetic organic chemistry, from the University of California, Berkeley.
Okay.
You know, that real conservative school out west.
Wait, let me stop you there, because a lot of people say, you know what, these Bible-thumping creationists, they aren't scientists. None of them have legitimate degrees in anything, and especially not from the elite colleges of America. And here we are, right here today, with a scientist who's done real research, who has been around and who is educated at some of the top universities, which are extremely secular.
That's true. One of the other folks in our ministry is Dr. Alan White, his PhD from Harvard.
Yeah.
And so he and I fight about which school is tops in chemistry. So, Dr. Dwayne Gish, you probably have met him. I have too. Just a fantastic. He's gone to be with the Lord now, but he went to Berkeley as well.
How about that?
Okay, and I could probably name others.
Yeah.
But I was in California. I went to college in California. Got my chemistry degree from the University of California, Davis.
Okay.
And then went on to Berkeley for my PhD. I was recruited to go to Eastman Kodak out of graduate school. Went to East Tennessee.
Okay.
To work in research and development, production, pilot plant, everything to do with the production of organic molecules. And photographic molecules, chemicals, are very complex. There's a lot of difficult chemistry done in photography. So I worked in that area and then did quite a bit of work with small molecules and finding new synthetic processes from a molecule which was the monoepoxide of butadiene.
Sounds like a big word.
Yeah. And so I spent many years developing really dozens or over 100 different products you can make from that. So I love chemistry. I had a great time doing research. But I retired in 2010. Mm-hmm. And have been enjoying retirement. I've been so busy in retirement, I don't know how I had time to work before, frankly. But I'm with a ministry called Canopy Ministries. Yeah. I've been with in Canopy Ministries, I forget how long, 15 years or so. And I know you know the leader of it, James Gardner.
That's it.
You've interviewed him a number of times, and so you two are friends. But he's the president of our little ministry. It's a creation evangelism, creation teaching ministry. And so we speak around the country, even in foreign countries, on the subject of creation science and the reliability of the Bible, the perfect compatibility of the Bible with science.
Yes.
Which is not what we hear. We hear that they contradict.
Right. That the two cannot be combined, that there's absolutely nothing in common. You have to choose between your faith or real science, right? That's the way it's presented. And James is actually flown over the Grand Canyon with cameras strapped to planes. He's contributed to some of our projects in the past. Again, you mentioned Dr. Alan White and others. These colleagues are doing groundbreaking research, telling the truth about God's creation. And the truth doesn't always fit with the narrative that we're told in most universities, in most of our textbooks, with the narrative that has indoctrinated school children since kindergarten, with the story of dinosaurs living millions of years ago, taken out by an asteroid, right? But you know me, I love astronomy. We've talked about astronomy a lot, just in the privacy of travels and other speaking engagements. And the more I look at space, the more I see this complexity, this design. There was a famous astronomer by the name of Carl Sagan who was infamous for calling Earth a simple pale blue dot, wasn't he?
That's right. Yeah, pale blue spot.
Yeah.
And which it turned out to be just an artifact of the photography process, but it was taken by Voyager, pointed back at the Earth, and it's a remarkable picture. And he elaborates on that a lot with his evolutionary point of view of the universe. And I like a quote that Carl Sagan made a number of years ago, because it ties together what seem to be two unrelated scientific disciplines, which are two of my favorites. And his quote was, "The fact of evolution." And I stop the quote right there and say, he says fact.
The fact.
What is a fact? It's truth, right?
Yeah.
It's truth.
Yes.
But he claims that evolution is a fact. Okay. Well, I disagree already. Mm-hmm. But to continue with the quote, given the fact of evolution, we have ample evidence that the fossil record and molecular biology prove the truth of evolution. That's a paraphrase. I don't remember the exact quote, but that's the very important gist of it.
No, but he's calling on fossils and what was the other
molecular part? Biology.
Molecular biology as these champions of the air quotes, by the way, for those listening right now, air quotes fact.
That's right.
Of evolution.
And I say that those two subjects, which he linked together, interestingly, they seem to be quite different, are really the nails in the coffin of the evolutionary theory. Uh-huh. Because the evidence from the fossil record and from molecular biology are just overwhelmingly in favor of a young Earth, of a cataclysmic global flood, and the design of in nature in the microscopic world.
Yes.
So so I like speaking on those two subjects because it's so evident that it refutes the theory of evolution.
Absolutely. You live out in East Tennessee. We have mutual friends who actually have a beautiful camp out in East Tennessee. It's a Christian camp with all of these activities. One of my favorite activities is there is a very old railway system that goes back into the mountains of East Tennessee. And as you go back into the mountains, you're seeing all of this geology, but you're also seeing geology that is extremely hard to explain from a uniformitarian point of view, from old ages, right? Things like bent strata, where the rock layers will be completely vertical, and then all of a sudden they turn into a horizontal position, which is very difficult to do over millions of years or hundreds of thousands of years of simple compression and heat. But then you start to look within the rock layers all over East Tennessee, and there are a lot of coal seams. There's a lot of Pennsylvanian, Mississippian type coal seams where we're finding plants, where we're finding fossil evidences. And that fossil evidence is abundant, but it's abundantly pointing to rapid preservation, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, you know, I've used the term fossil fuels for, you know, all my life. And I never really thought about that word much. I don't think most people think about that.
Right.
They fossil fuels, you know, they're thinking coal and gas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, they are fossils. They really are fossils.
Right.
And evidence of a cataclysmic covering, a destruction of plant and animal life, and then rapid covering, deposition of to protect the plants and animals from further disturbance.
Okay, so let's think about it for a second. If we think of the oil fields, of the pockets of oil deep in the earth, if we think of the coal deposits, if you simply had animals lying around for 1,000 years, 100,000 years, whatever it was, waiting to be turned into oil products, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to completely decay away. Animals don't sit there and turn into coal, into oil today.
That's right.
But a rapid catastrophic event that would have buried many animals, compressed them, and cut off the oxygen supply, sealing them from further decay, would actually produce some of the oils that we use for our gasoline for locomotion today.
Exactly right. And same arguments for coal.
Yeah.
A huge amount of mostly plant matter that was buried under large amounts of sediment, the compression, the heat, producing coal in that process.
Well, now, a lot of people say, yeah, but coal itself is an evidence of long ages of time because coal takes, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years to fully mature into this beautiful anthracite material, which has been upturned by so much scientific research lately, where even in the labs, we're able to create almost anthracite pure coal mm-hmm. in the matter of minutes
yeah.
with the right processes, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
When we realize it's not really about time, it's about the process involved, the rapid catastrophic burial that took place in the Bible, in the Great Flood, then all of a sudden things become more clear, don't they?
Oh, so much. Yeah, it all makes sense. You have to bend over backwards to try to explain these things from a long uniformitarianism point of view. We don't see fossils forming along the roads from roadkill, right?
That's
true. Or bisons in the Great Plains. It's hard to find bones or fossils or anything from them. And they were killed by the thousands.
That's a great point. They were killed by the thousands. And then if evolutionary theory is correct, then it means that we as ape-like humans have been evolving for several, like 300,000 up to 3 million years, turning from ape-like creature to humankind, which means that there should be potentially billions of individuals like you and me, ape-like creatures turning into humans, billions that have lived and died. Well, where are all the remains of those billions of creatures?
Exactly. I love that argument, too. I suppose there's ways you can get around the argument. There's always a rescuing device for anything we put forward. Right?
There's always duct tape, yeah.
But I can't remember all the numbers now, but I did a calculation because I was looking at the growth of population.
Mm-hmm.
And I was using very reasonable growth rates. That I think anybody would agree with, and then if it was a evolutionary time period of the millions of years,
yeah,
how many bodies, how many people would have lived in total, and it turned out being the total volume of human bodies would have stretched out to like Alpha Centauri.
Wow.
So, I mean, they could argue with my calculations. Okay, maybe it's only halfway to Alpha Centauri. But yeah, the numbers, you had to go to logarithms to finish the calculation because they were so, the exponent was so high.
Yeah, the skeptic would say, well, you know, high infant mortality, diseases, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It kept the populations down to bare minimal until technology was there. Again, there are always these pieces of duct tape that are supposed to try to patch the holes in evolution. But here's the problem with this. And Steve, I don't know if you think the same way about it, but if we're really pursuing science, then we should be open to new theories instead of trying to patch old theories to simply make them work.
Absolutely.
The antiquated theories of evolution have been going on for the past 150 years or so, and they have caught the scientific world by storm back in the day. But now that technology and science has increased to show that there are huge gaps, major problems, no transitional forms, we could go on for hours about the problems,
mm-hmm.
isn't it time that we ditch that completely and say, maybe there's another alternative? Maybe evolution isn't the way at all.
Yeah, if they were honest, they would be open to that.
Yeah.
They really, really, really would.
Now, the other topic when it comes to molecular biology or anything like that, mm-hmm. that Carl Sagan mentioned is also another field of science that has advanced greatly within the last, say, 30, 40 years.
Oh, tremendously. Yeah, with scanning electron microscopes mm-hmm. And all the biochemical and molecular biology techniques that they have now. It's just an exploding area of science. I think if I were a young person starting all over again, headed off to college, I'd go into molecular biology, yeah. biochemistry, genetics, because it's an exciting place to be.
Yes.
But the more I look at it, the more it's evident that there's a creator out there that designed all these intricate machines. You know, you've talked about the ATP synthase
yes.
enzyme in our cells, that this complex rotary motor is producing the ATP energy storage molecule. Yeah. And when then we're using it in our muscles constantly, I've read that the amount of ATP a human body produces in a day is about half of the mass of the whole body.
Is that
it,
right?
It makes it and uses it and recycles
wow.
half of your weight in just the ATP molecule.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's a lot of chemistry going on there.
Yes, it is.
And you need those enzymes to do it.
There's this concept known as irreducible complexity. It was pioneered by people like Behe and others, and they used to use the mousetrap analogy, right?
Yeah.
Where you have several basic components, like a little wooden pallet with a spring and a catch and a leaf. It's like a few components, and yet if you were to take away one of those few components, you would never ever catch a mouse, right?
That's right.
So it's irreducibly complex. You can't reduce it at all, or else the entire thing fails to function mm-hmm. as a mousetrap.
Yes.
Now, again, some skeptics, some, you know, intellectual atheists, they'll say, well, maybe half of an ATP system might have functioned as, right? Yeah. And that's one Something more is. Rescuing mm-hmm. device.
It is.
But in reality, what we see is in biological life, there's irreducible complexity all around us, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything. I don't know how a logical thinking scientist can look at life.
Yeah.
I mean, mention anything, any science, but let's focus on life.
Right.
And how they could not see that there's a creator behind it. Yeah. It's so complex. Now, in Darwin's day, microscopes were simple. You know, cells were just these little blobs, you know,
right.
protoplasm or whatever they call them. And they didn't have all this information about what the cell was like. And now we understand so much more about how the cell operates, and we can see things in finer detail with microscopes, that it just blows the idea that it's just protoplasm. It's just nowhere to be useful to his theory. I think if Darwin came back today and he honestly looked at all the evidence now, he'd burn his book or his manuscript.
More than likely. But, you know, then you have to ask, well, what was his agenda? Darwin was a bitter person. He had gone through yeah. losses. He was questioning everything. He was looking for an out, an excuse, right? And Charles Spurgeon, known as the Prince of Preachers,
mm-hmm.
he eloquently realized, and he's living during the same time period as Charles mm-hmm. Darwin, he's seeing the negative effects on society, and he said, these evolutionary scientists, right, they care not so much for evolution in and of itself, and I love this is a direct quote, they care not so much for evolution in and of itself, but only so far as it may serve their purpose of escaping from the thought of God.
Oh, that's a great quote, yeah.
In other words, it's not so much about evolution. It's not so much about... Most scientists realize that it's a dying theory, full of problems, riddled with holes. But again, they have to stand on it because it's their only thing separating them from the idea that they are accountable to a creator.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they want to be their own gods.
Yeah, they love their sin. They want yeah. to continue their sin.
Yeah.
But not, they don't want to be accountable.
Right. And again, sometimes that's on the subconscious level.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's impacted all of society. And then you look at some of the brightest scientists throughout history, arguably most of them accepted that there must have been a creator. And then all of a sudden, when evolutionary theory took hold, now it's an intellectual thing to be an atheist. That's sort of the modern day in, right? And yet, some of these scientists who might have been atheists or at least agnostics are seeing the design pattern. And they're saying, well, there must be a designer. And some of them are coming around and they're saying, well, obviously, God is real. And they're turning to our Christian faith. Others, on the other hand, who don't want that accountability, are saying, we see design, we see complexity, so there must be a designer. But we can't have a God, so let's go with aliens.
Yeah.
The hoops that some will jump through.
And then where did the aliens come from?
Right. It only backs it up, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, famous Nobel laureates like Francis Crick,
yes.
He even bought into that because he saw the complexity of DNA yeah. evolving. There had to be another explanation, and he's grasping at straws to go for aliens?
Aliens.
Yeah.
Which brings us to sort of in the last few moments, it brings us to something that very exciting that is going on in the Wonders. We're currently in the studio's production area of the Wonder Center and Science Museum just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Where we have exhibit halls dedicated to biology. We have exhibit halls dedicated to paleontology, dinosaurs and fossils. We have kids' hands-on activities. We've got an award-winning world-class planetarium. We've got million-volt Tesla experience. We've got wonders of astronomy. But even though we are newly opened, we're still working on several of the exhibit halls. One of those is the Wonders of Geology. And in the Wonders of Geology, you actually just drove out, was it yesterday? Day before yesterday. And you brought something. Can you tell me what that was?
Yeah, I brought one of my biggest endeavors, projects I've ever taken on before. It was much bigger than I imagined it would be. But I volunteer at a hands-on museum near me. It's only 5 miles from me. And they have an exhibit in their lobby, which is a augmented reality sandbox.
Okay.
What that is, it's a box that you stand in that you can manipulate with your hands. It's low so the kids can get into it. Mm-hmm. And there's a 3D camera, it's from a Xbox from years ago, looking at the surface, detecting the elevation, the level of the sand, sending that data to a gaming quality computer and software that interprets it and then sends a projection back to the sand surface through a projector and a mirror. And on the surface, it puts the contour lines of the elevations, like you see on a topographical
right.
map, as well as colors, like a relief map. And so that's a augmented reality sandbox.
Wow. And you spent several days installing it, even after the entire construction process and calibration process and all that you've had to go through. Now, it is being installed, as we speak, in the center of Wonders of Geology, where kids and adults, my goodness, I could play for that play with it for hours, but kids and adults alike can come in and they can use this augmented reality to move sand, create mountains, create seas with fish swimming in it, like animals walking across. They can create land bridges to get the animals from one side to the other. So much can be learned along with great skills for people today. You know, a few days ago, I was on my way to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention up in Nashville. And AT&T had a global outage. So it was at least a national outage. I believe it was a global outage. Uh-huh. None of the AT&T signals worked. And I'm like, I can't use my GPS to get downtown Nashville in all these little streets. And I was like, wow, how much do we rely on that kind of GPS and technology with our phones? But what if it went down? It's actually very useful to have in your back pocket the ability to read a map, the ability, if you want to go hiking on a geological exploration, you want to know you want to have the topological features of the terrain so that you can tell elevation and all of that. These are things that you can learn with this augmented reality sandbox, and by the time this is aired, it will probably be open, the new Wonders of Geology exhibit with the sandbox, with information on Mount St. Helens and what can be learned from the rapid catastrophic events at Mount St. Helens, with a bioturbation exhibit where we look at how the soil is disturbed with whether it be ants or worms or roots, whatever it is. And yet, in the fossil record, in the geological record, we typically see all of these layers stacked on top of each other, featureless, almost as if they were stacked on top of each other hours or even minutes apart. So much can be learned from geology, and we appreciate your work and the work of Canopy Ministries in really letting the audiences around the world know about these evidences that most people take for granted. In 20 seconds, wrap it up for us. What can we learn about standing on God's word by looking at his creation?
We can trust it. There's evidence all around us. You look anywhere. I pull up a blade of grass. A chemist cannot reproduce what happens in a blade of grass in a cell there. It's evidence of a designer. It's all around us. Don't be blind. You know, realize it's there.
The Godhead itself is evident. All you have to do is look around. That's what we find in the New Testament, in the book of Romans. It is so evident. His creation is revealing his divine nature. And that's including Jesus Christ.
That's right.
We absolutely love having you out. We appreciate you being here, and we're going to have you back out to discuss some of these things in the future.
Okay.
Thank you,
good.
Steve. Okay. And thank you for joining us on Changing the Narrative. Until next time, I want to remind you to keep looking up. I'm David Reeves. Truly, the heavens declare the glory of God. Find us on all social platforms to stay informed. Watch Genesis Science Network 24/7 for free on Roku, Fire TV, and on our website. Visit the world's largest origins-based store, creationsuperstore.com. Plan your trip to the Wonders Center and Science Museum just outside of Nashville, Tennessee.